Hi, I'm Kathy Forstie, Music Director at KC Cafe Radio. Today I have the pleasure to talk with not only an amazing songwriter, but an amazing artist, Mark Cote. Mark's new CD, Funhouse of Your Mind, is an inventive, catchy, and thought-provoking concept album using diverse styles of music from the Beatles to the blues and from jazz to vaudeville. Mark Cote, thank you so much for joining us today on KC Cafe Radio.
Wow. Thank you, Kathy. It's a pleasure to be here, and that was quite a lead-in. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks.
Where are you at today?
Actually, I'm home right now and trying to avoid what's supposed to be a thunderstorm, although I love the rain. But actually, I wrote a song about it, right? I Wish You Rain, so.
And home is in?
Home is in Los Angeles. I actually do like this weather because it forces me to stay inside and to be a little creative, you know. Things to do, so it's good. The rain or the snow, whatever it is, for me personally, I like it. It keeps me inside. So
you are not originally from LA, though. You're originally from Canada, right?
Yes, I was born and raised in Toronto, Canada.
Oh, cool. How do you find the differences between Toronto and LA? Not only weather-wise, but music-wise. How do you think they're different?
That's a good question. I would say Canada definitely has a more European slant, I think, in terms of how they approach music and the way music is consumed and appreciated. I think there's just more of a support system. People seem to be a little more supportive about getting out to support live music and artists. In Los Angeles, there's definitely a healthy and thriving music scene here, but everybody's basically car bound, so it really takes a lot to get people once they've driven on the freeways all day for an hour and a half or whatever to get across town, to get home, eat dinner, and then get back in the car and go out again. It's a lot to ask of people. So there is that difference.
Now, your parents are of, your dad or your mom was from New Zealand originally, is that right?
Yes, my mother is from a small town called Palmerston North, which is in North Island. Mm-hmm. It's two islands in New Zealand, the North Island and the South Island. The South Island is infamous for where they film Lord of the Rings. So, yes, she's from the North Island, Palmerston North, and my dad is from Montreal, Canada.
And your parents are artistic as well, is that right?
I would say so, yes, in their own right. My mom especially is an artist, and she's a painter, very talented painter. And they've always been just really, really supportive of me in the best way. There was never any kind of a pushiness. It was always just sort of allowing me to express. And ever since I can remember, I've always had a burning desire to be creative and express myself, whether that was through art or music. They were always sort of synonymous for me. I just really enjoyed it as a means of expressing myself.
So you also paint as well?
I do. I do. I paint. I have worked professionally as an artist, and I actually had a big hand in the overall concept and visual layout and design of the CD and the packaging of the, I did the illustrations inside the CD book.
This is a really cool CD, not only music-wise, but artistic-wise as well. I love the paintings you did in here, especially the end picture you have of the clown there. That's really cool.
Yep. Right,
he's he's not really a friendly clown, I would say, maybe.
Yeah, he's got that slightly sinister thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I think all clowns, don't you? I think all clowns have something. There's something, I don't know, spooky, whether it's that frozen smile or what, I don't know. There's something a little unnerving about it. But I wanted to make an experience for the listener, whoever took the time to sit and be at one with the music, with the CD. I wanted to reward them with a little adventure, and that was my driving force in creating the illustrations.
Mm-hmm. Did you also do your own website as well? Because it's really vivid and a really fun website to just look at visually.
Thank you. Yes, I worked collaboratively. I really have to give full credit to an amazing visual artist here in Los Angeles called Buck Down. And he's a great musician in his own right, but he created the website and would send me these little snippets. And he knew the style of music, and we had talked at length about what we were going for. And the best thing about working with Buck is it was all sort of done, even though he's in Los Angeles and I'm in Los Angeles, we never actually had to get together physically to create this. He would send me bits and pieces, and it was like he was reading my mind. He completely interpreted the music in a really great way. So
yeah, the website is sort of like a funhouse of your mind as well. I mean, it's just really fun to even go through and look at. And the way it's laid out, too. You can listen to the songs and...
I just wanted, as I said, to create, you know, an experience for people with the music. I think a lot of the excitement, the magic of music and what music means to people has sort of been a little bit shortchanged with the iPods and the downloading. There's mm-hmm. sort of an intimacy. Yes, you know, you got it in your earphones, but when you used to buy that physical package, you know, whether it was a CD or vinyl, which of course now is coming back, mm-hmm. or cassette, you know, you had something visual to look at. It wasn't just sort of this entity that just was in your headphones.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about your musical beginnings. You said your parents are artistic. Were they also musical, or?
They were, you know, it's funny. My grandfather, both sides of the family, my grandfathers were very musical. Loved to sing and play the piano. Same with my grandmother. So there's definitely a DNA thing going on there. My dad is not an active musician. He appreciates music and loves good music. My mom is a singer, loves to sing. So yes, it was sort of a... There was a stubborn gene, say there. And I would say that, as I said, I was always singing and enjoying music and painting ever since I can remember. I think my first, what you could call serious training, if you want to even call it that serious, was when I was about 9. My parents offered me lessons to learn acoustic guitar. And I just really struggled to apply myself to the discipline of practicing. And it wasn't until about maybe 3 or 4 years later, they bought an old upright, 1901 Gulbranson upright, which I actually still have. It's a great piano, one of those honky-tonk pianos. And they brought it in the house, and I fell in love with it. There was an instant affinity for this instrument. And I started to take it a lot more seriously, the idea of music and expressing myself creatively at the piano.
Mm-hmm. And how old were you then?
I was about 13, and I played, I took piano lessons, but I was about 17 or 18 when I first actually started to write my own songs.
So were you writing on piano then, or on the guitar?
Yeah, I was writing on the piano.
Do you also play guitar as well now, or?
No.
No, no. You're...
So, you know, I have a confession to make in junior high and high school, that the one instrument I did take up was the string bass, mm-hmm. which is, of course, a huge, rather unwieldy instrument to lug around. So I was like, I was definitely put in the nerd category. It's a nerd because I played in the orchestra, and I was so unhip and so uncool because I'd have to sit in the back of the bus, school bus, with this huge bass because there was no room for it in the aisle. So I was always at the back of the bus with my upright on the weekends to practice. So
I think it's usually it's the bigger the instrument, the bigger the nerd. I don't know. I played French horn all through high school and college, so I was in the nerd category as well. So
okay, sure.
So you said you wrote your first song about 17.
Yes.
Do you remember this song and what it was about?
I do, actually. It was a song called Sparrow, and at that point, I was very much influenced by the writing. I just love the really rich visual writing of Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell, the way they would express themselves using visual pictures and metaphors. So I was very influenced by that, and I remember it was I was 17, 18, I think it was some tortured love song. I was using this metaphor of this little bird, this sparrow flying away. It was all very sad. You know what it's like when you're 17 or 18.
Right. Yeah, and we're full of angst. And
oh.
Well, your songs, I mean, even today, though, they're very full of a lot of imagery. And you definitely get pictures in your brain whenever you're listening to your songs, because they kind of just... they illustrate themselves in your brain as well. I mean, you're a brain illustrator, I guess I would call you with your music.
Thank you. I like that. I've never been called that, Kathy. I'm going to have to write that down. I really like that.
Yeah.
I think when I sat down to make this album, I had the good fortune of working with a very talented producer, Michael Frondelli, who produced quite a number of albums for artists over at Capitol Records. He produced Oingo Boingo and Danny Elfman and Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. He also worked with Marianne Faithfull, quite a number of other artists, but when we sat down and I played him my rough demos, he really got it. And he was like, you know, this is really visual. So we went for broke, absolutely went for broke to really try to make the music really pop visually for people.
Mm-hmm. It definitely does that. And you mentioned the old upright piano. I mean, I really hear that in there as well. I mean, did you use an old upright piano in any of those tracks?
I did not. We used samples a lot, and then in some cases, I did find an old piano that I used, mm-hmm. but it was not the actual, my old Gulbranson that we used. But we tried to get something as authentic and as close to that as possible.
Yeah, it definitely has that authentic sound to it. So how would you describe your style?
Well, Kathy, I think you really nailed it in the beginning. You named a variety of different genres, but I guess to kind of capsulize it, I would call it rock of vaudeville, which is kind of a term I coined, that I take elements of rock, that being a little bit of the blues and kind of the 60s pop, the bouncy kind of rock, pop rock of like the Beatles, and then kind of mesh that in with this vaudeville element, you know, this ragtime era vaudeville, which has got that jazzy kind of vibe going for it. So I would say rock of vaudeville.
That's a cool term. I like that. I hear a lot of the Beatles kind of the Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour kind of sound in there as well.
Thank you. Yes.
I like that a lot. So growing up then, who were your favorite writers?
Growing up, I loved some of the Canadian artists. There was no favoritism going on there. But I really loved Joni Mitchell. I loved Neil Young. Bob Dylan, Tom Waits, Randy Newman, definitely Lennon and McCartney and George Harrison. Did I say Leonard Cohen?
Didn't mention him.
Leonard Cohen, I love his stuff, his the beauty of his lyrics and his music. Peter Gabriel, Cole Porter, Sam Phillips. I'd say those.
That's quite a variety there of writers. Yeah, I you mentioned Cole Porter. That's very rare someone mentions someone like that, because he was one of my early influences as well. I loved his old songs. My parents played a lot of music from the 40s, 30s, and 40s for me growing up, and so I really loved Cole Porter and the stuff he did. So
his stuff is brilliant. I mean, I just think he's an amazing. If you sit and you can actually take apart his songs, how they're structured, the craft, that goes behind each of those songs, it's phenomenal. You can take those songs and play them on any instrument and they're going to sound great. You can even sing them a cappella. The lyrics just are such a really beautiful marriage between rhythm and lyric and melody.
Mm-hmm. He was a craftsman in every sense of the word. So if you those were your early influences, do you have anybody like today that you enjoy?
There's so many artists. I love the diversity of music right now. I think that's one of the beauties of the internet, is that it's really opened up the whole diversity of what music can be and broken down a lot of the kind of genre-defining barriers that leave a lot of good music out in the cold. You know, there's so many artists I love. I love a lot of the British artists. I love some of the bands like Elbow, Keane. A lot of those bands have their influences in the Beatles as well, but I like artists as well, like Jessica Hoop, who's a great singer-songwriter. Sam Phillips, again, I mentioned her. Yeah, like I said, there's some amazing talent out there right now.
Yeah. So what is your writing process like?
I would say it usually starts with the emotion. There's usually a feeling inside of myself that really is compelling me to try to articulate it, write it down, or express it, or get it out in a way that other people might identify. And so I would say it starts with just the emotion, a feeling of wanting to say something. And then from that will come an idea for a title, or just a scratch of a lyric. I keep a notebook handy. I like to write in shorthand. And then if I start to feel like there's sort of a groundswell that the song is in a sense writing itself, then I continue to go with it. But the funny thing is I love to sit at the piano and, you know, play around with, once I have a lyric idea, maybe scratch around on the piano and plunk out some chords or hum something. I always keep it. A little recorder handy. Mm-hmm. If I'm in the car, then my phone, cell phone becomes, I call myself at home and sing in my those machines. I can't forget this. I'm gonna lose it. But the funny thing is, I would say I actually have written some of my best songs away from the piano. In terms of the melodies, they'll be when I'm doing the most random things, like vacuuming or cleaning my house or making my bed. Or I can remember those moments. It's like, oh, I got to run to the piano. That's it. That's that chord. Or, you know, so it's a very magical process.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that writing is cathartic for you? I mean, do you write from life experiences and it helps you work through those?
Yes. Yes, I would definitely say it does. It's definitely reflective of experiences I've had. It's also reflective of people around me. I might have observed their experiences and wanted to write a song about that. So, and it, you know, each song is its own little journey. I start and it takes me out through this little voyage. And I just have to kind of be submissive and go along with where it's taking me. And you come out on the other side and it's like, wow. And I think, you know, the gifts of writing this way, when you feel a need to express yourself, as you said, cathartic, I think it really does, it gives you a wider perspective of yourself and life in general.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite cuts is I Wish You Rain. Was that a breakup song, or where did that one come from?
Wow, I wonder. Does it sound a little bitter there?
It's a little bitter, but I mean, I like bitter, so.
Yes, that definitely came from the wall of shame. That was definitely an experience, and I it was very painful. Even the whole bit, the diner, you know, much of what the song talks about, getting the kind of news that you weren't anticipating getting, and in an environment like a coffee shop, and then just the feeling of just the sheer I you know, it took a little bit of guts for me to come to terms with those feelings of like the petty jealousies and the bitterness, and try to at the same time make fun of it, because it can be, jealousy can be a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
It can make us do crazy things and just spin us off in all kinds of wild directions. And I think that was one of the things that really made me want to write the song, was when I came up with the title. Because I'm like, okay, I've got this whole scenario of this jealousy and this environment and this, oh, you know, how am I gonna say this that's gonna be somewhat funny, painful, and ridiculous at the same time? And then this whole idea of I Wish You Rain, just this idea of me just. And, you know, for, as the lyric says, for all your blue sky tomorrows with him, secretly I wish you rain. So.
Yeah, it's a great song. I like just the way you turn the whole, you know, when you wish someone something, you usually wish them well, but you wish them rain. It's really brilliant.
Thank you.
So what's your favorite song by someone else of all time?
Wow. Geez, I would have to say, you know, what comes to mind, there's at least, can I throw out three, maybe three?
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely the song Imagine by John Lennon. That song just still really, really affects me. His recording of it, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's very powerful for me. And I love Something, that would be Neck and Neck a Tie with Something by George Harrison. And then there's also a really not a well-known song that has always been one of my favorites, that really, I think when I first heard it, I was about 17 or 18. And it really, really made me want to be a songwriter, just to be able to attempt to even try to create in 2.5 or 3 minutes a song that could really move people, because this song did. It's a song called Martha, and it's by Tom Waits. And it was actually his very first album that he put out, called Closing Time. And it's a song, it's a long distance phone call from an older man to a woman named Martha. And it's just sort of, he's dialed her up out of the blue. They're both old, very old. And he's recounting about how he missed that chance. And he's wondering, he's trying to make small talk. And by the end of the song, you've really gotten to the bottom of the fact that he's still in love with her after all these years. And it's like, wow. Mm-hmm. So it's so beautiful and so affecting. It's just amazing piece of writing. And then, of course, I love a couple of songs by Neil Young, After the Gold Rush and Helpless, are another two favorites of mine as well.
Yeah, you picked some great songs there. I can't argue with any of those choices. I'm going to get back a little bit to talking about Funhouse of Your Mind, which is the new CD by Mark Cote. And if you want to get a copy of it, you can go to www.markcote.com. It's spelled MarkCote.com. Make sure you go there, and you can also find it on CD Baby as well. So check that out. On Funhouse, you mentioned your producer, Michael Frondelli. How did you meet up with him?
It was definitely a wish fulfilled. I did not know of Michael directly. I had listened to his music, to the, some of the albums he had produced, but never had thought about the idea of working with him. I had a friend that worked in the industry and still does work in the industry, and we had a discussion one day, and I had mentioned to her that I was, where I was trying to go with my music, what I was reaching for, and I played her some of the demos I had created at home, and she got a sense of this carnivalesque, very visual world that I was trying to create, and she said, you know, I do know of this producer, Michael Frondelli. He's at this point, he is interested in possibly working and looking for new artists to produce albums. And so I had to basically, it was more or less like an audition. I had to send him, mail him two of my demos for these two particular songs. And it was probably about a good 2.5-3 months later I actually heard from him. And he called me up and said he had listened and he wanted to get together and talk. And the rest was, as I would say, history. It was just a really, really wonderful experience. It continues to be working with him, creating. He really, as I said, grasped what I was trying to say as an artist. And so I'm very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. And so was it your idea for the whole concept then, for the Funhouse of Your Mind and the carnival kind of atmosphere it has? And I mean, you know, the CD, you know, it kind of takes you on a journey as well. Was that your idea or was that his idea? Or
yes, it actually was my idea. What happened, I had taken him two, I had mailed him a demo of two songs. One I had written, which is a song which is not on the CD, which was much more of a straight ahead pop rock kind of a song. And then the second song was Everywhere But Here, which is on the CD, which is a song which is reflective about after, in the aftermath of a relationship, you're kind of, if the two of you have lived together, that person somehow leaves an object like a sock or a toothbrush or something around that is really representative of them in the relationship. And before you know it, you've got this virtual museum.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of, I wrote that song and Michael heard it, and it had that somewhat kind of carnival feel to it. And he kind of nudged me in that direction. He said, you know, I really feel this is really who you are as an artist. And, you know, it really made me be a lot more fearless about expressing myself in that way, in terms of the songs and the songwriting. So we pushed aside the first song and went straight ahead with Everywhere But Here. And as we created it in the studio, it definitely took on a life of its own. It became very, you know, sort of that being for the benefit of Mr. Kite kind mm-hmm. of crazy world. And it just, I got so excited by this, the way it turned out. The next song I actually wrote was Funhouse. And that kind of gelled everything together because I thought, wow, this could really be a whole concept. The kickoff song is the Funhouse of Your Mind because, you know, for better or for worse, I think we all do have a Coney Island Funhouse in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
All these crazy attractions going on. And so each song, I decided I wanted each song to be a more or less an attraction inside the funhouse, as if you were going inside this funhouse and there was this barker like, hey, come on inside, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And because we've got all this crazy stuff going on in our heads, like, you know, these emotions, jealousy, anticipation, regret, love, happiness, all those feelings. And I just thought, wow, it could actually be like this crazy funhouse.
Mm-hmm. Where did you guys record this CD?
We recorded in a number of places. We recorded this at Sunset Sound. We did a lot of the drum tracks because you need certain rooms for the ambience to track drums properly. And so we did that. We tracked a lot of the drums and the horns at a place called Sunset Sound, which in Hollywood is a legendary studio. It's been around since the late 50s. And when I got in there, I was just like ready to follow my knees in just it was so overwhelming because a lot of artists had recorded there, like Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, Mahalia Jackson, Led Zeppelin. I mean, the list just goes on and on. So we recorded there. We also recorded at a studio called Westlake Recording, Broken Wave, and Glenwood Place Studios, which is in Burbank, California. And then I actually recorded some of this stuff in my bedroom on my laptop. So
wow.
it was a real mix of places. And then we actually mixed the album at my producer has a studio in his house that's set up, which is really great. So.
And how long did it take you to record it?
The whole process, because I had not written all the songs when we went into the studio. As I said, we started with Everywhere But Here, and it steamrolled from there. So there was always a period of about maybe about 2 months or so between the recording sessions. We would go in and really start to from start to finish, record a song and mix it. And then I'd be like, okay, because it was definitely a work in progress, being a concept album. It really, it set a bar for me to try to reach in terms of, okay, I've covered that emotion or I've covered that set of feelings with that song. So what's left here? You know, I kind of went down my list. So it was, the whole thing probably took about, I'd say, between 2 to 3 years.
Wow. That's a real labor of love there.
It was definitely a labor of love.
You're very dedicated. That's awesome. I also looked at the video to Funhouse of Your Mind. Where did you shoot that? And who did that video?
That was directed by a brilliant director here in Los Angeles by the name of Daniel Mitchell. He's from England. And by way of Australia, his wife is actually Australian. And, you know, it's a funny story how we met. I swim for health and recreation. And Dan was more or less on the swim team. He and his wife are both great swimmers. And we started talking. And we more or less swapped information. I went to his website. I saw his beautiful work as a film director. He went to and listened to my songs, some of the songs that I had finished, like Funhouse. And we realized, you know, wait, there's got to be a way we can work together here. So Dan actually storyboarded a whole concept for the song Funhouse and presented it to me. He came up with the idea of the little flip book, which is featured. And I love that idea because it was so retro and it was just so unusual. And he had a really great team of people that he had worked with. That actually, the video was art directed by a man named Bob Hill, who actually came over here from Australia and has an incredible background art directing films and television. And they really wanted to make this happen. We had a micro budget. It was like a teeny, teeny budget to make this happen. So this was, again, it was a labor of love of a whole group of people coming together to create something very special. And we shot the video in 2 days, and we shot it in two locations. Shot it in Topanga Canyon, which was all the outdoor stuff that you see in the beginning of the video. There was a very old house that was actually a set for a movie that became available. So we shot that. And then the interiors were shot at a club in downtown Los Angeles called One Eye Gypsy. And a lot of those really crazy interiors came courtesy of Bob, who ran all over the city and dressed, went around to all these incredible prop houses and found all these amazing kind of spooky sideshow circus paraphernalia and decorated the whole club up with that.
Neat. Well, it definitely doesn't look like it was done on a shoestring budget. It looks like it was spent millions of dollars on it. It's very, very well done. I mean, there's nothing amateurish about it at all. It's amazing video.
Thank you.
Are you getting anybody to play it, or is it just basically available on YouTube right now? Or
it's available on YouTube. We've actually submitted it to a number of film festivals, and it has actually been picked up. Was nominated for the Holly Shorts Film Festival in here in Hollywood, which was a great honor because they have a whole section devoted to music videos, and they really loved it, so it qualified as a nominee for that. It did not win, but it was just great to be part of the whole process. And then recently, it was also part of the ITV. International Television and Video Festival here in Los Angeles as well, and continue to make the rounds on different film festival circuits. So it's picking up steam and getting a life of its own out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely needs to be seen by a lot of people because it's a great video. Are you playing live anywhere?
Yes, we're in the process of gearing up for that, to do the whole live thing. I'm kind of approaching this two ways. I'm doing it faithfully with a band, like you hear, you know, pretty much recreating the, or at least attempting to recreate the richness of what you hear on the CD. And then also, I love the intimacy as a songwriter of just sitting down at the piano. So I'm working on kind of reinterpreting these songs just for piano and voice, which is a little bit of a challenge because, as you know, hearing the album, there's a lot going on in the arrangement. So it's sort of like taking the songs and reorchestrating them in a way that it's still going to be exciting for a listener to hear and experience, which is the voice and the piano. But I think the thing I like about the piano is it really gives people an opportunity to hear the lyrics and to kind of get inside the story.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, to answer your question, that's definitely in the works. We're gearing up for all that.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Anything you wanted to add? Or
I just want to say that it's a privilege to be here talking with you. I really appreciate the work you do in terms of really helping independent artists like myself get exposure and to reach audiences and be appreciated. Certainly without the help of people like yourself, it's definitely a much tougher road for indie artists to achieve. And of course, I'd like to thank the fans who continue to support the music and just, you know, they have my gratitude.
I really wish you a lot of luck. This is a really great CD, and I think it's one of those CDs that should be in everybody's iPod or whatever they listen to music on anymore, because it's a lot of fun to listen to, plus it's emotional to listen to, and it just, you know, it's a range of emotions that you really get with a CD, not just orally, but mentally as well.
Wow, thank you. You just said it with such eloquence. I appreciate it.
I wish I talked eloquently, but
you do.
But I want to tell everyone where they can get the CD real quick. It's at www.markcote.com. It's MarkCote. They can also find it on CD Baby, and they can also be friends with you on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, please. I love friends. So, and I love hearing, you know, one of the things that makes this whole process so wonderful is to just hear people, the feedback of what songs, you know, what songs mean to them. If one of the songs I've written has some particular significance to them and what that means, it just makes this whole thing worthwhile. I do want to say as well that people, I'm trying to push the CD because I love the whole visual experience for the listener, but they can also get it, of course, on iTunes, and it is also up on Amazon.
Yeah, but I recommend you buy the CD because you'll get the full experience that way.
Yes.
Well, thanks again, Mark, for talking to us, and I appreciate you supporting Casey Cafe as well. We wouldn't be there without artists like you to support, so thank you so much.
Completely mutual, Kathy. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.